Hi, I'm Maggie.
And I'm Nicole. Welcome to the DAC Dyslexia and Coffee Podcast. We're so happy you could join us. We're both moms and dyslexia interventionists who want to talk about our students and children, what dyslexia is, how it affects our kids, strategies to help, and topics related to other learning disabilities will all be covered in this podcast. Parents are not alone, and we want to give a voice to the concerns and struggles we are all having. This is a safe place to learn more about how we help our children grow and succeed in school and the world. Grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the conversation.
Hi, everybody. It is time for the concept of the week. So concept of the week, that is our opportunity as practitioners to kind of pull back the curtain a little bit and let you into an intervention session. So we talk about topics that we would be teaching about in our interventions. So this week's concept of the week is a Greek combining form, morpho. Morpho or morph means form, structure, or shape. It is used in scientific terms like morphology and also morpheme, which is directly related to our topic today.
That was a good one.
I like when I do that.
And we are going to be talking morphology today.
Yes.
So what is morphology?
So morphology is the study of the structure and formation, right, morpho, of words in language, including the way that they are composed of smaller units called morphemes. It is the study of how words are built and how their forms change to convey meaning.
Nice.
Sometimes I do explain this to my students that, like, it's about the meaning. It's about the meaning of words.
So maybe we should review
Yes. Quickly.
What is a morpheme?
So a morpheme is the smallest unit of meaning in a language.
And there are two categories, correct?
Yes. So a free morpheme can stand alone. For example, the word rabbit only has one morpheme. That is, even though it's two syllables, rabbit is the smallest unit of meaning in that particular word. It's a word all by itself, so no need to, you can add a prefix or suffix there, but it is a word all by itself, so it is free. Where a bound morpheme must be connected to other morphemes in order to have that meaning. So for example, if we have the word rabbit and we add suffix s, it becomes rabbits. So that suffix s at the end is a morpheme because it adds meaning to that whole word.
Because it means more than one.
Yes.
So there are two categories of free morphemes. So there are function words. These are considering like conjunctions, prepositions, pronouns, auxiliary verbs, articles, and other words which show grammatical relationships. So some examples, but, below, he, was, etc.
Mm-hmm. And then there are content words, which carry meaning and include nouns, verbs, adjectives, and adverbs. Things like run, happy, quickly, which, by the way, that's two, quick and lean.
And so now, what is morphology?
So helping an individual, right, create a personal framework for understanding the meaning of root words or base words, it reduces the pressure of working memory and processing speed, which is a characteristic of dyslexia. That's kind of about, right, why do we teach morphology, right?
Correct.
So morphology, right, is that study of structure and meaning. Why do we do it? Because it reduces the pressure on working memory and increases processing speed as well as vocabulary.
Correct. And it's also word building, correct?
Exactly. You know, what's really cool about morphology and why I really love teaching it so much, there's so much efficiency in teaching morphology. If you have 20 root words and 14 prefixes, you can understand 100,000 words.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
That's amazing, right? So much efficiency there.
So let's go into why is morphology important?
Yeah. So first and foremost, right, word recognition. So understanding, right, that structure of words, it helps beginning readers recognize and decode unfamiliar words. So by breaking down words into meaningful parts or morphemes, readers can infer the meanings of new words based on their familiar components, right? A good example we teach so early on is that suffix S.
Right.
Right. If kids understand that suffix S means more than one, they can understand a lot about words and stories.
Exactly. Another reason is vocabulary development. When readers understand how prefixes, suffixes, and root words combine, they can understand the meaning of a wide range of words.
Yes. You know, spelling skills. Recognizing common prefix, suffix, and root words helps students spell words correctly and make connections between words that have similar morphological structures. Right? I only have to teach that prefix pre, P-R-E, one time. And now my students know it. They can pick it up on other words. And it increases their spelling skills so much.
Mm-hmm. Word meaning. Understanding morphemes within a word allows students to infer meaning of related words and make connections between words that share common elements.
Exactly, right? If we know the word, the prefix pre means before, mm-hmm. we can understand.
That prefix goes before the base word.
Exactly.
Pre-school,
pre-heat, right? Words like prehistoric, right?
Yes.
All of those
come
have
before
that prefix, and they at least have one part of the meaning of the word.
Correct. Reading comprehension. Knowledge of morphology allows readers to identify relationships between words, notice differences in measuring, and infer the meaning of unknown words in a text.
Exactly, right? The whole point of reading is reading comprehension.
Right, we want to know what we're reading about.
Everything we do here relates to reading comprehension. So what is worth discussing here mm-hmm. is how the history of the English language affects the morphology of our language. So English is what's known as a polyglot, right? Poly meaning many, glot meaning tongue, many tongues, many languages.
There we go with morphology.
I love it. So what is important to kind of bear in mind here is we have different languages coming into play over certain time periods. So we have the Greek civilization. We have the Anglo-Saxons. We have the Romans who spoke Latin. And over time, different civilizations took over parts of, you know, European nations and elsewhere where English was being formed. We also have the Normans from France. A little bit of our Viking stock comes into play. There is some Norse influence in our language as well. Not very much. But it is kind of important to talk about how different language structures do have effect on our English morphology.
Correct. So Anglo-Saxon, tell us more.
So the Anglo-Saxons, that layer of language makes up about 15%, 15 to 20% in English. They are common, short, everyday, down-to-earth words used frequently in ordinary situations, and they're found everywhere. Our words like down, our direction words, the, and all of those are Anglo-Saxon words. The Anglo-Saxons were pretty tribal and also nomadic. So a lot of their language was very oral, and this is why we have some very interesting spelling choices coming into play. So the words that are of Anglo-Saxon morphology are often made up of two smaller base words that form a compound word. So cat and fish get stuck together. Now we have the word catfish. Cup and cake get put together. Now we have cupcake. Many of the prefixes in Anglo-Saxon, if we do have any, are prepositions. So they're showing direction or location.
Okay.
Words like withstand, understand, bystander. Right. Okay. We're looking at where or how is that stand happening. All of the Anglo-Saxon base words can stand alone as real English words with no prefix or suffix. That is really different than the other layers that we're going to talk about today. So a base word alone, that's a word. Sun, thunder, flower, boat. No need for a prefix or suffix there. But we might have a base word plus another base word. That's what we were talking about with compound words, right? Sun plus flower equals sunflower. We might have a prefix and a suffix. The word forget, for is a prefix, get, or undergo. That can be a word. And then, of course, a base word plus a suffix, outing, outing, kingdom. We might have all those three things together, prefix, base word, plus a suffix. So forgetful, understanding, befriended. All of those are different combinations that come from an Anglo-Saxon morphology. Those are ways that we can construct real English words.
So the next one is Latin. Latin language.
Yes. So the Latin layer of language is quite large. About 55% of our words in English actually come from the Latin layer. Those Romans, they were conquerors. and their influence is widely, widely felt. So in the Latin layer, this is a fun layer to teach because it is such a large layer of English, and the rules are pretty concrete for this layer of language. So highly decodable and encodable layer of language. In Latin, the prefixes here again, they usually show direction or location. So that's kind of similar to the idea of a preposition. The roots in Latin often show action. So they're usually verbs, and they hold the basic meaning of the word. We do teach students that that's kind of a fairly important thing to understand. So something like ject, J-E-C-T, ject, means to throw. That is an action. If we do not put a suffix on it, it will still remain an action. And that's how we use it. So suffix then, right, they change the tense or the part of speech. So if we say reject, to throw back, that is a verb. But if we say rejection, now we've put shun, T-I-O-N there. Now it's a noun. So it affects how we use those words. So how do we build words in the Latin layer? Very simple. I like teaching this layer kind of like a good analogy is like building with Legos. These kind of just really fit together. We might have just a prefix and a root, like project or reform. We might have a prefix, root, and a suffix. Projector, inspection, interrupted. Or we might add a connective, which is not a part that has meaning, but we need it to kind of connect our root and our suffix. Words like ambiguous or impediment, that if part is not a meaningful part, but it is necessary to make that connection. And then experience, another good example. We might have a root connection and a suffix like audience, monument, spatula.
And then there's Greek.
And there's the Greek. So the Greek layer of language, it is not a huge layer of our language. We don't have tons and tons of Greek influenced words, about 10 to 12%. So sometimes we get asked, okay, so if it's only about 10 to 12% of our language, why do we spend a good deal of time on the Greek layer? Which we do. That's a great question. It is a lot of our science kind of words. A lot of our medical terminology comes from the Greek layer of language. So while maybe it doesn't account for a big percentage of our language, those are some very important words to understand. And even to have a meaningful part, right? Cardio comes from Greek, right? I'd say it's pretty important as a functional human being to understand cardio, cardiac. That has to do with the heart. That's a functional life being a human being.
Correct.
Element.
Exactly.
And so it's pretty important to teach that kind of stuff. Words of Greek origin, they're a little bit different than Anglo-Saxon or Latin about their structure. They are made up of word elements, sometimes called combining forms, and they can occur in many different places in words. So it's not as much like building with Legos, where we have this and it goes here, and we have the next layer and it goes here. Words that come from Greek, they often have noun meanings. They're often function. So the combining form morpho means structure, right? That's a noun. Phon means sound, also a noun. Scope, sight. So if we leave those alone, we need to know that those are nouns unless we're adding a suffix onto them. So these combining forms can be a little trickier to teach our students how to use them because it's a little more loosey-goosey in Greek. You might have a combining form where we have almost like a compound word, right? We might have para plus graph. Paragraph. We might add a more than like two, right? Diagnosis. That's actually three combining forms. All three of those parts have meaning on their own. Metamorphosis. Meta and morph are both combining forms. Cis is a combining form. And then we do have a connector there. So Greek does use those connectors as well. And then, asymptomatic right? That is actually five different elements coming together to make that word. So it can be a little bit tricky to teach. I'm not saying we're going to spend tons of time with our students getting into the ins and outs, right? We are not Greek language teachers. but some of those combining forms, if we are teaching them to recognize, right, like simp, that would be, right? What's a symptom? What would it mean to be asymptomatic versus symptomatic? Those are things that our kids absolutely do need to know.
Correct, yeah. So some principles instruction could be the degree of transparency. So teach transparent, stable morphemes first before teaching more obscure meanings.
Exactly.
We got to build in those ones that make the most sense first. Introduce morphemes and words in which the meaning is transparent and the spelling is consistent. Like going back to that PRE in predict is more transparent than pre and prefer, meaning the root dict is more straightforward than the root fer, as in prefer.
Right, exactly. Like predict, right? So first of all, the pronunciation is more
easier.
Yep. But if we do know the morphology, we can look at, oh, prefer, that's really interesting. Well, guess what? That still actually means before. Mm-hmm. We are going to change that. We're going to flex the vowel a little bit. Fur means to carry, actually, to carry or convey. It's a little less transparent in the word prefer. But if we have taught it early on,
right,
that can be transferable for a student.
And obviously we're going to be more general when we introduce morphemes. So we use the morphemes that are used more commonly in more words first. And then we get to the more complex. So we first introduce derived forms that don't change pronunciations or spellings of the base word or root word, and then gradually introduce derivatable. That's not a good word. I didn't say that right.
Yeah, the derivational suffix.
Thank you very much. Oh boy. That produce orthographic and phonological changes in a base or root. So basically, it changes how you would say the word.
Exactly. So we're not, this is kind of like, okay, how do we choose what morphology elements do we introduce to our students and when? And that's kind of our guideline for that. We right. really have to think about, okay, how transparent is it? Mm-hmm. How general is it? And how complex is it? This is where we do as practitioners sometimes have to make different decisions based on who's in front of us.
Right. Like a younger kid would probably more be on the general side.
Yeah.
And maybe an older student, we might get a little bit deeper. And then if they're a college student or adult, we might have to do a very deep dive.
Right. We might have to get kind of more in the weeds with some Greek or kind of more obscure Latin bases that I maybe wouldn't teach ordinarily.
Especially if it's going to, they have a goal of being something that may need those type
exactly.
of words.
I see a fair amount of students that are interested in the traits, and I can tell you things that relate to mechanics, electricity, all of that has pretty heavy Greek influence because it's scientific. And
exactly.
So I do spend some more time on roots and companion forms that have to do with that, so that when they're reading a manual, they understand that they're not having to do that cognitive load. It's there, and they have a better understanding of what they're up against there.
Yeah. So what kind of activities can we use with our students?
Yes. I really enjoy teaching morphology.
I think we've noticed.
Yes. I personally find it really interesting, and I also find that this is kind of the point in instruction with a student that they start to light up a little bit. They start to really kind of be like, wow, okay, I'm empowered to actually understand. Sometimes what I hear from students is like, I don't like reading because I just don't get it. But once they start understanding the structure, they do get it, and it makes just so much more sense to them. So one of the activities, kind of one of the ways I like to teach morphology, is called structured word inquiry. So this is actually a teaching method that uses scientific inquiry or questioning to help students understand how words are spelled. And it's based on the idea that English spelling is organized around the relationships between morphology, etymology, meaning where does the word come from, and phonology. So it kind of brings those three things together. And it's an approach that is actually teaching spelling, but it's based on meaning. So some kind of key takeaways for students is letters can have more than one job. Words in English are spelled according to meaning. Phonemes and graphemes are different from each other. and that word structure, it deepens the understanding of content area words, like in math or science. So you end up kind of having like a matrix. So you look at a word, and we are explicit about this. So we choose carefully the words that we're going to instruct in this way. I might take a word like knowledgeable. Right? We've got knowledge, which is actually two morphemes. We've got know and ledge. Ledge is a suffix. Able is a suffix as well. And I would have them break them down and kind of understand, oh, what layer does each, what meaning does each layer bring to a word like that? And we do that because that can transfer. If I understand able is able to, I can understand that in a lot of other words.
Right. There's a word family sort, and this is where we cut up words that belong in the same family, like player, playful, playground, and put them in a bag. And then we include words that don't belong to the family as well. And then we would introduce the base word, which is would be play in this case, and discuss what it means. And then you grab a word from the bag and discuss whether the word belongs to the word family play. And you, does it belong? How do we know? And then we would make a family word chart building with those different words and parts of the words that are in the bag.
Yeah. This can be a really great way to kind of marry that phonology and the morphology part.
And it's multisensory.
And it's multisensory, right? If I'm using the word play, you know, A-Y is that vowel team, mm-hmm. right? And those suffixes that I'm going to choose are going to be pretty decodable.
Right.
I'm not going to throw things that they don't know at them. That's
right.
That is not what we do.
There's also word building with cards. So we provide students with cards representing the different morphemes. So there's prefixes, roots, and suffixes included. And we have them physically manipulate them to build new words. And then they are able to tell us the meaning of each part as they construct the word.
Yeah, that one's pretty fun.
I was going to say that. And it's pretty straightforward.
It's straightforward and it's fun. And, you know, sometimes you get a combination that you kind of think, well, that should be a word, but it's not.
And then we have a morpheme flashcard drill. And this is when we present flashcards with different morphemes, ask the students to say the meaning of each one, and then gradually introduce words that those morphemes have them and break them into words into their different parts. Mm-hmm. And there's also a meaning sort, and this is where we provide a set of words with different morphemes and have students sort them based on their meaning, grouping, and words that have similar prefixes and suffixes.
Yeah. You know, that one can be also pretty empowering for a student, because they get to kind of see different ways that we might sort words. You know, there's more than one right answer here sometimes.
Correct.
You know, if we're using kind of the same prefix, suffix, and only a few roots, sometimes a student can sort it more than one way.
Right.
You know, in nerd speak too, right, that's also allowing them to build that schema in their brain.
Right.
So that schema is the way we learn associations. Mm-hmm. And put things kind of, for lack of a better term, like different buckets in our brain. So if we're putting words in more than one bucket, that is really great.
Exactly. We also do sentence building with morphemes. So we give students a base word and then a few different prefixes and suffixes, and they have to create sentences using the newly formed words.
Yes.
So that's kind of making it a little bit more challenging to them. But it also is keeping them working with the morphemes in different ways.
Yeah. It helps them understand how words are used. If we have a base word that is a verb and we don't want to use it that way in a sentence, okay, we're going to have to add something to that word, or we're going to have to choose different wording. It's a really good way to help their grammar come along too.
And really at this point, if we're doing morphemes, they have some grammar basics that we've already taught them explicitly, and we're practicing those.
That's right.
We have morpheme matching games, where we create a matching game where the student matches the base word with its corresponding prefix and suffix to form a new word, which is also fun. And then what's the word game?
Yes.
And this is, you provide a definition and then give them a few morpheme options, and the students must build the word by combining the correct morphemes to match that definition.
Yeah. My students really love that one, and they love to flip it around too, mm-hmm. which makes me go, yay, you get it.
Exactly.
I love when a student flips a game around on me and it's like, your turn.
Yes. Yes, me too. There's add a morpheme game, which you start with a base word and then make take turns adding the prefixes and suffixes to create new words, saying the meaning of each new word. And then the morpheme detective. This is when students read a passage and identify words with specific morphemes in them, and you discuss the morpheme change and how that morpheme just changes the word and the meaning.
Yeah, this is a great one because you can do this really early on. Right. Mm-hmm. This one kind of sounds like maybe a more advanced, but I will do this with small children that I see, and I will do it with suffix S. Suffix S and ES. Let's find those suffix in this little paragraph, have them highlight them, and then really talk about it, because sometimes they don't actually get it.
And then there's word webs. You start with a base word or a root word and have the students list the prefixes and suffix that could go with those base words or root words, which is kind of fun too, to see how much they can pull out from what you've been teaching them.
Yeah. And kind of what they already know. I think this is, a lot of my students like this one for that reason. All of a sudden we end up with like a whole page of words only from a few elements, and it's pretty great.
Yeah, and then they're really proud when they know what all those words mean.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And some really fun discussions come from that kind of work where, like that construct, Con means together. Struct means to build. Construct is like, oh, it's building. It's together. That makes a lot of sense if we think about what construction is.
Correct.
So I find that when I'm explicit about teaching this, it transfers to their individual work. I find that they're trying to use those in sentences that they're coming up with.
I think they feel like they found a hidden meaning, or
yes,
so they figured it out when other people might not know.
Yes.
Sometimes yes. Art students really like to
they
do that.
Really like to do that. they really like to do that.
So Maggie, what's going on beyond dyslexia?
That is a great question, Nicole. So as we record this, this is the week before spring break, and we are having a little bit of an up and down week at the Gunther House. my son's teacher is going on maternity leave, and her last day is on Friday. And I think we're just starting to realize that she's leaving and like not coming back. I think it's kind of hard in first grade. I think his idea, because I don't know that we were so explicit about it, but I think his idea was like, well, she's just gonna go have a baby. It'll be a couple of weeks, and you know,
she'll be back.
And she's not coming back this school year. They have a long-term sub that he does really like. So it is kind of bittersweet. He was really cute about it because I asked him, so what do you think about your new teacher? And he said, she's really nice and really beautiful, but she already has a husband. So my sweet boy, I think, has his first teacher crush. But, so he's excited about the new teacher, but he is really sad about his teacher going on maternity leave. And if I'm being honest, I am also very sad about that because she has been wonderful. So
that's good.
We're excited for spring break, but we're having a hard time with this is kind of the end of something. So all the emotions.
Yes. So we're having kind of a hard time too in Wisconsin, if you're not from here. Our weather can change overnight. Like by a lot.
And literally.
Literally overnight. Like a couple days ago, it was 75 degrees and we were having storms. And then within 24 hours, we were in the 20s and having snow. my kids are not transitioning that fast for this. So, you know, having the correct clothing on for the weather is not that easy this time of year for us.
I think we could do it a whole episode about wardrobe.
I mean, yeah, a 60-degree difference in 24 hours really just messes with everybody's...
so hard. It really is about executive functioning.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It's so frustrating.
So that's kind of what we have going on because, you know, it's March in Wisconsin and it's going to keep going like this until it gets to the summer.
Yeah. Today it's supposed to be like 60 and tomorrow it's supposed to snow.
Yep. It is what it is.
What the heck? Here we are, but we're used to this. This is the way.
This is Wisconsin. Yeah. What can we say? Well, thank you for joining us. Please follow us on social media and reach out if you have any questions or would like to discuss any topics.
And if you do like our show, be sure to follow and rate our show on your favorite podcast player. This is how we reach more listeners and get to help more families. Thank you.
Thank you.